Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace, and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Hi, hello, and welcome to Call It What You Want. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Jesse Marsh and Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies. And we have a great show for you as always. And guess what? No word of the day today. No call
what?
It. Yeah, it's not happening.
You gotta be kidding me. It's
I've been on a roll, man. I've been on a roll.
You know what?
Jesse's been slaying it as of late.
Charlie must have paid the producers off to remove that.
Jimmy, I'm not gonna accept that. Listen, it's been a tradition. You can't break it.
Okay.
That's conceding. Forfeit.
Okay. This country knows the word as soccer. Which where did it originate?
United States.
England.
Mama slay to you, Jesse Marsh, for getting that one as well. All right. We're talking about Greg Berhalter. He's hinting at the Nations League lineup decisions, including Gio Reyna and Tyler Adams. Brandon Vasquez doesn't know where he stands. Got some interesting quotes from him. Sandra Herrera is going to join us to talk about all things W Gold Cup and the U.S. Women's National Team's chances after an exciting win against Canada in the semifinals. They take on Brazil this Sunday on Paramount Plus. And then we have our pick of the weekend games to watch. We got a lot to talk about. But first, we're going to get into the Europa League. AC Milan hosting Slavia Prague in the round of 16, leg one at the San Siro, and Christian Pulisic decided to steal a goal from Rafael Leao and make one his own. I got plenty of time for it because we know that Dusan Vlahovic is stealing goals from Weston McKennie for Juventus. It's fine. It happens at times. And if you're a goal scorer, you just got to put it in the goal. You can't take the chance that it might go in because somebody's feelings might be hurt that you stole their goal. But Chuck, you think that there was a question after the game that he felt uncomfortable? You saw the press. Give us some context here.
Yes.
4-2-1 for AC Milan, by the way. Go ahead.
Let's also put this in context because he was part of the buildup in the goal. So he helped.
He was.
He helped facilitate. You could see right here. Boom. He sneaks it in. And that
I love
next
his running
pass,
off the ball.
The next pass from who is it? Who plays it to him? So he gets in and then so it's Luka Jovic and he plays it out to Leao. Now look it. Pulisic he's trying to get in there. It's going in. You see the defenders on the line and he gets a toe to it right here. Toe. It was
gonna
go in.
I'm not sure it's going in.
Oh, Jesse.
I'm not sure.
This
100% angle here, it doesn't look like it's going in.
100%.
If you're a player in the middle and you know it's contested,
that's going in 100%. 100%.
I can't say that with 100% certainty. I don't know how you can say that.
Don't get a really good angle.
I absolutely can. But what I am saying is it wasn't one of those things that it was like, I'm stealing this goal. The defender was there to try and make a play, and he goes in to make sure I'm putting this in. I'm going to 100% guarantee it goes in. Either way, he was a part of the buildup. He helped facilitate that. He gets on the end of it. Give him a clap.
For me, Charlie,
have the interaction.
He's put himself, he's put himself in dangerous positions a lot and doesn't get the extra pass from his teammates at all times. So he's been, for me, he's been in that position countless times this season and hasn't been rewarded for it. So, and yeah, I have, again, we talked about him. I had no problem with him last week drawing some red cards. He draws another one again tonight.
You did.
But listen, he's running in the box. He's putting himself in dangerous spots. Like, keep stealing goals, man. Keep finishing plays off.
And this is the play where he gets taken out, the ankle. Lucky to escape injury. Elijah Juf tackles him, studs exposed. He gets sent off with a straight red. But you can see that ankle kind of buckled a little bit, but he escaped injury, played on. This was early in the first half. But again, this is where Rafael had two assists in the game. It's not like you did nothing and Christian's competing with you for your position. You know, there's sometimes where if you're a striker and you're down a goal, whatever, the coach subs on your competition, you're playing, you're about to score, and the guy who's competing with you scores. And you know there's animosity there because you're both competing. This is not that. Leao is a made guy. He's playing every match. So there shouldn't be an issue. It's like, you joke about it. And then Leao could say, hey, that goal bonus, you can share that with me. You know, let's split it 50-50. A fun joke, whatever. And move on.
Wait a minute. You had a goal bonus, Jimmy? Did you ever have a goal bonus, Jimmy?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. I wish. Nice. It must be nice. Yeah. I've got two things. The first one, though, is this means Christian Pulisic, with that red card that you mentioned that he drew today, he's drawn three red cards in the last two games, which makes me think, you know, there's certain people out there that have a really punchable face. Is there like sometimes there's just players you want to kick.
Are you speaking from experience?
Yeah, that, he's 100%
rumors right now.
He's 100% speaking from experience.
Listen. All I'm saying is there's certain players out there that you just want to kick, and I wonder if Christian Pulisic is just one of those players for people that you just want to knock around and kick. Listen, I'll raise my hand. I'll give you a name. Okay, Pescadito. Carlos Ruiz played for the Galaxy, played for Guatemala. I couldn't wait to kick that guy, mainly because he was kicking me first, and it was a good back and forth between us, and so I appreciated that. But and if you remember, Ricardo Clark, who's like the nicest human being around, kicked Carlos Ruiz when he was on the ground and got suspended for like 9 games. I mean, that's how much Carlos Ruiz gets under your skin, and I wonder if Christian Pulisic has got some of those vibes going for him right now. I don't know. I'm just kind of tying this together. But I did tease his interview after the game where he got asked that awkward question about stealing Rafael Leao's goal. So let's hear how that went down.
Hey, Christian, did you steal Leao's goal? Is he angry with you?
Oh, I felt like I had to touch this. I'm not sure if it was going in, but amazing play from him. So
UEFA gave the goal to you. Ninth goal. Have you got a final objective in?
Yeah, a little awkward. It was awkward.
It's uncomfortable because it's like you're being accused of something. You're like, I'm just playing the game. So I'm not out here just trying to poach goals.
Jesse knows how to navigate these very pointed questions, I'm sure, with your time at Leeds in particular.
Christian's a good person. He's a good guy. He doesn't want to stir anything up in the team. I think he's really – like we've talked about at different moments, he's still trying to really establish himself in the team. You don't want to create any friction. Leao is their big talent, no question. But I think, you know, whether it's talking about red cards, whether it's Christian being involved in more goals and assists, like I feel like he's more active in matches now. I feel like he's up and down. He's coming inside more. He's going 1v1. He's running in the box. Like, this is the kind of Pulisic that I want to see week in and week out. And I think the more that he can stay active, can stay dynamic, can be running in and inside and running down the line, running in the box, running back to defend, winning duels, like, then the quality will continue to show. So in the end, I feel like Christian's getting more comfortable. He's inserting himself in matches. He's going to get better and better. Leao's time in Milan can also be limited because some big clubs can come after him. I think that Pulisic's found a good home at Milan.
Okay, so right now Christian has 9 goals and 7 assists in all competitions. And before I ask you where you think he's going to finish here with about 10 to 11 games to go, assuming, well, maybe even more if they continue in the Europa League, Christian did post on his Instagram, "Not job's not finished," and Rafael Leao gave him 3 handshakes. So it seems like all's good. So
Just why three handshakes? Why three? 3 points, maybe?
I don't know. Either way, I think it's just saying for all the people out there trying to create something, it ain't it. So we're good. We're going to move on.
All right. So
by the way, Jimmy, I called Pulisic with 15 back in January.
You did.
And I think he'll get there. Right?
You think he'll get to 15?
Yeah. Well, especially if they continue in Europa League and they have keep having matches, I think he can get to 15. And
I called 9 in March. I said he'd have 9 by March.
Okay. I don't remember that. That sounds very convenient right now. I want to say I went with 10 and 10. I had 10 goals and 10 assists, if I'm not mistaken, but somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. Where do you think he's going to end up? Because I like where Jesse's at. They've got 12 games right now left on the schedule. Obviously, when they get past Slavia Prague, hopefully, in leg two, they're going to have 2 more games. So that's
the fourth goal was big, by the way. Really
it was big.
Prague clawed themselves back in the match.
Even with the red card, it's just down, man.
Yeah, it was crazy.
They scored some bangers, by the way. Just want to shout out Slavia Prague's goals.
I think Christian, with 12 games left, scores 4 goals. I think he ends up with 13 goals to end the season. And assist-wise, I think he at least gets 13 and 11.
All right.
Which is a hell of a season.
Double-double.
That's a hell of a first season, especially in a new league with a new team and getting that type of trust.
And a team like Milan.
Of course. They're right now third in the table in Serie A, 1 point behind Juventus. It looks like Inter is going to take it, though. The Scudetto, that is. But you never know. Maybe they'll fall apart. They won't. But a good first season for Christian Pulisic, all things considered. All right, we're going to take our first break of Call What You Want. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Greg Berhalter and what he had to say recently. So don't go anywhere.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back, everybody, to Call What You Want. I'm Jimmy alongside Chuck and Jesse, and we got some Greg Berhalter news because he recently spoke to The Athletic, and he had some choice quotes for us, and we're going to start with quote number one. That's about Gio Reyna and his lack of minutes. Are you two fastening your seatbelts here? Hopefully you are. He says, we know Gio is a creative player. We know he's a great player for the final pass, and, you know, we have to see what he can do in terms of workload, how long he could last in the field because he hasn't been playing, but we also see other options as well. Dun, dun, dun. He continued, for us, it's trying to figure out exactly what we need in each game, but knowing that we have a lot of options to choose from, we're going to try to figure out how we're going to beat the teams that we're playing against and what we need on the field to beat that team. Then we're going to go play against and play against them, and then who can do that? That doesn't sound like, I don't know if I read that correctly, and I didn't graduate from college. Everybody stay in college. That's probably the best. But Jesse, I'm coming to you on this because this feels like a lot of coach speak. And as a resident coach, what are you picking up out of this quote in particular about Gio Reyna?
Well, I would hope at this point that Greg Berhalter has had a conversation with Gio Reyna about what the expectations are for him to come into this camp. And then I think, if you have that kind of dialogue ahead of time, then you're able to then discuss freely because the player can trust that anything and everything that you say is about what's best for the team. And so this is always the key for me when you speak in the media is you never want to draw too much attention or to any sensitive topic. And most importantly, you want to make sure that internally everybody is clear and comfortable with exactly what the plan is and how you're moving forward together. So if it is the challenge when you're the national team, because you're not together and you don't get to see each other every day. And so the ability to communicate through text, email, phone calls, and make sure that you're constantly in contact with your players is massively important. So in the end, we can't expect Gio to provide us with 2x90 minutes in this window. It's not realistic, right? He hasn't been playing. He's not going to be match fit, 90 minutes fit. He may need a little bit more of a carved out specific role to have within the team. And we have to make sure he's ready to perform no matter what his role is. And given the gravity of these matches right now, he's got to be ready to go and contribute in every way.
Now, Chuck, how do you think Gio's going to walk into this situation? What do you think his expectations are going to be? And do you think they're based in reality?
He can't have the high expectations he would have had he not made the move to Nottingham Forest, because the Nottingham Forest move, let's be honest, it's a big failure. You don't leave Dortmund to go to another club and play less or just not play enough, not significant minutes to continue to develop, to show your quality. And not only that, to get match fit. So you're going into the national team. And I think what really works against Gio Reyna is the fact that players in his position are excelling and playing. You look at Johnny Cardoso and what he's been able to do at Real Betis in La Liga. The same goes for Luca Della Torre. He's taken his game up a whole notch playing in La Liga and being almost a player you can count on with Celta Vigo, with Rafa Benitez. So you have those two. Then Yunus Musa, who's not playing as much as he once was, but still has figured into Milan's plans. And Weston McKennie being injured. So Malik Tillman is absolutely playing really well and showing what his quality in Champions League as well as the Dutch League, but continuing to get match minutes. So with all of that, you can't have expectations to start. I think starting is off the table. Now, on top of that, I'm always a firm believer of you may have an idea of how you want to use Gio Reyna, but let's say the game asks for something else. The game dictates a different move that you don't need to bring in that certain player that you were hoping to bring in. So therefore, you're kind of at the mercy of the how the match goes and the tempo and the result. So at this point, I think the expectations are you hope you come in, you train well, and you get some minutes in that first game against Jamaica. You make a difference, and then hopefully you try and earn more minutes for the final if you're able to beat Jamaica. So it's a difficult position to be in if you're Gio Reyna.
Yeah, it's 39 minutes and 4 appearances since joining Nottingham Forest. It's not the big splash we were all hoping for. So, Jesse, let's talk about Tyler Adams, because Greg Berhalter said this about him in this sit-down with The Athletic. Copa America, I think, is something that is more realistic, but I wouldn't rule out Nations League because Adams is training with his team now. He's back to training, so there's possibilities. And, in fact, to catch everybody up, Tyler Adams started a reserve game recently for Bournemouth, and the coaching staff was out there to watch him play. He didn't play the whole 90 minutes, but he did play. They ended up winning 5-0. Didn't really get too much more than that in terms of how he performed, but hey, him starting, not being hurt by the end of it, that's a big win for us. Obviously, Jesse, you coach Tyler with Leeds and with the Red Bulls as well. You know him inside and out. I guess patience is probably a hard thing. When you have an engine like him, sitting still to like heal from an injury must be very difficult. That's one. But second, now when he starts to get closer to really ramping back up, I feel like we got a tiger by the tail. He's going to be ready to go. I know we don't risk him for the Nations League. I think everybody's unanimous on that across the board. But Copa America feels like it might be real if he can get back into the team.
Yeah, first, I wouldn't even bring him into the camp, right? I wouldn't put him through the travel. I wouldn't put him through, you know, it's almost going to be a waste if he's not going to play because they don't have real training days. Leave him at Bournemouth. Let him continue his rehab. The most important thing he can do for the national team right now is get himself back to 100% health. So, and that has to be the entire focus for what for Tyler Adams selfishly, and for also for what's best for the U.S. national team. Yeah, and then of course, you know, I mean, Tyler has had if you go through his injury history, it usually is a problem that he has with his lower back that then causes problems in his calves and in his Achilles. And they're always trying to get that alignment right and trying to get his loading right so that he's in a good place physically. And I know Tyler well enough that over the years, even in training or in matches, I could tell almost immediately if he was feeling well or if he wasn't because of the way he moved. What you knew when he was feeling well, his explosiveness and ability to cover ground, his first step, his confidence on the ball, every part of his game was just clearer and sharper. So, you know, I mean, I haven't seen him now in this practice match, test match. But again, for me, 100%, the most important thing is that he continues on a gradual progression that gives him the best chance to get himself back physically. And I will tell you this, forget Copa America. Obviously, we want him for Copa America, but I'm just talking about for his future, for his personal best self. He needs to make sure that he manages himself physically from here on. And the fact that he's got himself back in training and he's got himself back in test matches, you cannot skip steps here, and you have to make sure that it's gradual and that he gets himself back to a full 100%.
My question is just to you, Jesse, because you've managed him at the Red Bulls, you managed him at Leipzig and then Leeds United. When did the injury start? And is it just because he runs all over the place that you're like, hey, calm down? Is it more you try and do too much and I want you to just kind of stick to you being a defensive midfielder and owning this space and this is your responsibilities. Don't try and do too many responsibilities just because he can.
One of the things that he used to do a lot more when he was young is, I don't, and maybe you can picture this in your mind, but he jumps a lot. You know what I mean? Like he'll take little jumps and like he's getting ready to attack a ball or attack a moment. And we talked a lot about making his movements more efficient so that he's not jumping and that he's just now moving and shuffling and waiting and then he's ready to explode. And I felt like a lot of this little jumping in his preparation to be explosive is what would put stress on his body and cause his injuries. He's gotten better at understanding how to manage himself physically within how he plays. And again, like you're talking about a guy that this is his quality, right? I mean, he's a good footballer. He's good on the ball. He's an intelligent mind, but his real quality is his physical ability to run, to chase the game, to set the standard at the pace the game should be played. It's why the national team can play with 1-6 when he's in there, because he can do the work of almost two people. So, you know, and again, this is why it's going to be really important for him to physically get back to 100%.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I also was going to ask something similar as to, has he always been somewhat injury prone? Or is this
yes
like
a no, new yes experience? And no. I mean, you know, again, whenever you have explosive athletes, right? So Charlie, I'm sure you had to always deal with hamstring injuries and things that Jimmy and I never had to deal with. Right? Sorry, Jimmy. I do not mean to put you in my category. That's not fair.
Listen, I did have a hamstring injury once, but it was unrelated to like being fast. It was more due to stress.
But
for me, not really though.
Physically. Really?
Yeah. I think I was very fortunate that I didn't really have hamstring issues. The most issue that I had was calf cramping at times later in the games. But it wasn't until I had the car accident and then my body got realigned and now I have a leg that's an inch and a half shorter. And so now different parts of your body are compensating more than they should. And that's when you talk about maintenance. And I think from this standpoint, what Tyler Adams has to do is you're constantly having to think about, am I doing all the stretches? Am I doing all the strengthening? Am I doing all the ice baths? Am I doing too much on one leg and forgetting about the other? So you're always constantly thinking about how am I making sure that I'm 100% fit for the match on Wednesday on the weekend. Sometimes that means I couldn't train on Tuesday with the guys, or I had to take an extra light day throughout the week. I don't know if you allowed guys to do that, Jesse. In some cases you say, all right, some guys maintenance is a little bit more important, so you don't have to train as hard on this day, or you only have to do half the training versus, you know, some guys you could push.
Listen, the higher levels you go, the higher level of athlete you're dealing with. And the more important that you can, your ability to evaluate where they are physically and understanding to tailor make exactly what's necessary. I mean, you're right. All of us as athletes, we had things that personally we felt we felt good about. The routines that we had that we felt, and half the time it was mental more than it was even physical, but things that we would do that we felt like helped us perform at our highest level. And then what we had always in the teams that I worked with is we created a stoplight system. And when players were green, they were ready to go. When they were red, they needed a pause or they needed a recovery day, a regeneration day. And when they were yellow is when you had to really evaluate, all right, where have they been at with their overall loading? Where have they been at with their physical performing? And how do we manage them exactly what they need today? Some days I would make Tyler Adams a neutral, right? Because I knew that that would ease some of his explosive movement. And then it would still also, then on that day, I would ask him, okay, now let's work on your ability to connect passes and your two touch play and your understanding of how to connect from point A to point B. So, you know, you can still use all those days and ways to help players get better. But for me, when you have high level athletes, the most important part really is to manage them physically and make sure that come match day, that they are ready to perform at their highest level and that their risk of injury is as low as possible.
Jesse, I think this is a big conversation because I think being ready emotionally probably ties into what you're trying to prepare for as well. But we don't have enough time to dive into that side of it because I would love to explore a little bit more about your methodology with regard to that. We'll save that for another time. We're teasing it for our future episode. All right, one last player, though, that had some quotes out there that I thought were interesting that were more Greg Berhalter related. Didn't come out of Greg's mouth, but Brandon Vasquez via Cincinnati.com said this, and I want to put a disclaimer around this. We're recording this episode prior to Monterrey, the club he plays for in Mexico, taking on his former club, FC Cincinnati, in leg one, the round of 16 of the Champions Cup. Okay, so just so we know, I don't know how many goals he's going to score against his former club. Maybe none. We'll have to wait and see. But this was his quote, which I thought was interesting. He got asked by the national team, and he said, "I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't know Greg that well, and he on the personal side has never called me up to a camp. So I don't know. I don't know where I stand with that. I've had a couple of conversations with BJ Callahan, Berhalter's assistant coach, the last couple of weeks. They are in contact with me. They are saying they're happy with how I'm doing, and they're proud of me for making a jump out of my comfort zone, but I don't know where I stand with them. I guess that's all there is to it." Interesting comments. This guy's had, Chuck, as a resident number nine, this guy's got 6 goals in 10 games with Monterrey in his 3 months with the club. They paid $8.5 million.
Best ranked team in CONCACAF.
Best ranked. Yes, we're going to talk about that later. Nice tease there. I like that, Jesse.
No, no problem. No problem.
But what do you say to this? Because this is a great problem to have. You have a whole bunch of our guys playing around the world, scoring a bunch of goals, and somebody's going to get left out. And it looks like maybe Brandon Vasquez is going to get left out this time around.
Yeah, unfortunately, right? You look at the depth chart. So Balogun is one. Pepe is two. And right now, Josh Sargent is killing it. He is in form. Josh Sargent starting in a World Cup game. So we know he's number three. If he's fit and in form. Now, Brandon Vasquez, you could argue, is the fourth with Haji Wright, who's also in that World Cup roster, who's playing consistently in the championship. So I think there's a number of guys who are in that fourth conversation. But if you're only playing with one striker to start, that means you're at most taking three. So I think he's on the outside looking in. Now, from Brandon Vasquez's position, all he can do is control what he can control. Keep playing, keep scoring goals. And if that consistency continues, guess what? Eventually, you're going to get that call up. And you got to make the most of it. But all I can tell him is, I know he's a good kid. He made the right move. It's putting yourself in a bigger competition with bigger expectations in a bigger club. And just continue to perform.
Yeah, it must be hard to hear. He's like, what else do I have to do? Jesse, there's actually one more quote that he had. He said, "My agent had a conversation with Greg about the move before I came here. All my agent said was that Greg liked the move and he rated it high. And that's it, pretty much." What I find interesting is that Greg seems to pride himself on staying in contact with the player pool, but hasn't directly managed Brandon Vasquez at all and seems to be handing it off to his assistant, which isn't a good sign for Brandon. It feels like there's some reason as to why that is. Cause if you really rated him, I feel like he'd be texting him like, "Hey man, keep it up. You're doing a good job."
You know, what's funny is I was going through some things, when I was unpacking a storage space that I had, and I got a letter from Bruce Arena when he was with the national team. He hand wrote me a letter.
He did that for me camp. Too.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he sent it, and he would do emails and things like this too. But listen, if you're the national team coach, this is a big part of the job, is making sure that you're communicating really well with the team and the players, and making them understand where they stand in the whole process of what's happening. So that, for me, that's a bare minimum, right? And I would also say Vasquez comes to camp, man. He's performed well. Right now, you've got a few injuries. Not sure where Weston McKennie is. Timothy Weah hasn't played quite as much. I know we know Sargent can play wide. Balogun's played some wide. Maybe you play with two strikers. Pepe's played wide. For me, Vasquez now is it's worth bringing him into the group and see how he looks. And if you need a goal and he's performing well in the couple of days that you have training in camp, this is what the national team is. When guys are performing, they have to be part of it. You have to give them a look, and you have to size up where they fit. So I know it's a lot of strikers and we'd only play with one, but maybe we need to think about playing with two, right? Especially with Weah not playing. Maybe from the start, we play with two strikers. Maybe you play with three. Maybe you slide one out wide, two out wide, or Pulisic plays. Like, I think you now have to bring in the players that are in best form and get them ready to perform in the best matches.
From your lips to the soccer gods' ears, Jesse Marsh. All right, we're going to take our next break. When we come back, Sandra Herrera is joining us. A little attacking third action, talking about the U.S. Women's National Team. Don't go anywhere.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Welcome back to Call What You Want. I'm Jimmy alongside Chuck and Jesse, and we have a very special guest joining us from one of our sister programs, absolutely dominating it on the Golazo channel and P+, and anywhere you can find your podcast. The attacking third, Sandra Herrera, is with us. Sandra, thank you so much for joining us. Apparently, for those that might not be in the know, the U.S. Women's National Team played in basically a swimming pool yesterday against Canada and won the game in penalties. And we want to talk about it a little bit because they booked their ticket to the final against Brazil. So give us your overall thoughts on the game, because it looked like we kind of had that bite and that fight that I think the U.S. Women's National Team is known for, and the men's team too. But for the women, they seem to be lacking that in the Women's World Cup, and now they seem like they got it back. Are they back? Are they back, Sandra? That's what we want to know.
Feels like it, doesn't it? And I think the fact that we're kind of seeing it, not just through that first knockout round game, but now once again in this version of a waterlogged pitch, the fact that they can kind of carry that through no matter the conditions, I think is very promising in the tournament. So it was kind of tough to watch in the beginning phases of all that, but something special when you're kind of witnessing that all within a rivalry game where you're looking at the two teams eventually just kind of saying, we're here, we're playing in it, let's go.
When I looked at the seeding after the group phase, I couldn't really make sense of how it was all put together and what was going on there. And then now you get, what I think what they were maybe shooting for, which was a potential Mexico versus U.S. final. Now you get a Brazil versus U.S. final. And who do you think are the favorites going into that match?
Yeah, I think it's a good shout, because I think we have to definitely give a moment to talk about the CONCACAF of it all. So this being the first iteration of this Gold Cup for women's senior programs, I think is massive. There's always been some sort of qualifying tournament in some capacity for women's senior programs, whether it was for World Cups or Olympics, and they maybe even borrowed the moniker of Gold Cup at one point, but it was never its own kind of singular thing. So to kind of have this iteration of it, I guess maybe they wanted to make sure it had that sort of special CONCACAF sauce to it. And so when it came to reimagining things, and that included the knockout rounds, and so there was a little bit of a re-seeding involved when it came to doing the knockout. So even if you may have won the group, things like goal differential were taken into consideration. So now that things are kind of done and dusted, I would say, especially after the quarterfinal round, any of those four teams, I think, would have been what could have been perceived as like a quote unquote ideal final. You know, could it there be a path for another matchup for Mexico and USA? Yeah, there was, but it's not coming down to that. It's coming down to USA and Brazil. And I think that also adds a little bit of extra spice to it in the sense where it's like, okay, this is the CONCACAF Gold Cup. And one of the invited guests of CONMEBOL are going to get a chance to compete for this sort of inaugural title. So I think there's going to be a certain level of pride there going into this final to make sure that this first ever cup actually stays in the CONCACAF region.
This Canada game, I feel like, it wasn't easy to play on a waterlogged pitch like that, but I think Canada showed their resilience as well to get back into it and take this to penalty kicks. Given that, I think Jenna Nyswanger showed a little bit of vulnerability at the left back defensively. She had a tough matchup with Deanne Rose. And then I think Tierna Davison got lucky a couple of times with diving in for tackles. How would you assess this U.S. back line and midfield? I mean, I think Sam Coffey and Corbin Albert did a very good job providing balance. But how would you assess this U.S. back line, knowing that they have a really tough test against Brazil next?
Yeah, no, I'm with you, Charlie. It's a good point to kind of shout out there, because I think that's maybe one of the disappointing things that are coming out, that's coming out of a match like that, where there was a lot of emphasis on the pitch. There was a lot of emphasis on, why is this even happening? Is someone going to get involved, whether it was officials or CONCACAF match commissioners, to ensure that player safety was taken into consideration? All of that, you know, was ultimately the story of the night. But I think the sub questions around that are like, we don't actually get a chance to maybe talk about what that means in terms of the tactics and how that back line actually looks, because I was really excited when that starting lineup dropped to see that pairing of Girma and Davidson with each other. I really liked what they brought in that first quarterfinal matchup against Colombia. I think that this is the beginning of something special at that center back pairing. Maybe they can continue to get some more time together. But in a game like this, it doesn't actually maybe really allow that. So, you know, I would say better from the two of them against Colombia, because we actually got to see some football, you know, and stretches of it. And then with this one, I guess maybe we just see that back line kind of just step up in the face of weather adversity, I guess.
Yeah. What I'd follow up with, Sandra, is the fact that we had leads twice in this game and we gave up the lead twice. And to what Charlie is saying, and Alyssa Nair probably came off her line a little bit, for those that didn't see it in the second extra time, she came out and the girl just headed the ball prior to her. I guess it's debatable as to whether you think that's a penalty or not, but they call a pen and we give up another lead. And I still think there were other chances that Canada could have taken advantage of. However, there are some bright spots. There are some bright spots. And one is named Jaden Shaw, 19-year-old, the first player in U.S. soccer history to score in their first four starts for the national team. That's pretty ridiculous. She scored again in this one. She plays for San Diego, the finals in San Diego against Brazil. It's all kind of lining up for her to have an incredible narrative to score the winner against Brazil as we win this first ever W Gold Cup. I don't want to put too much pressure on her. There's already enough pressure on her as it is. We love overhyping our players here, but she's clearly proving herself. What should we take away from her? Where do you think she's going to factor in against Brazil? And this is a Brazil team, by the way, that's only given up one goal in their five games so far in this tournament, and only 9 shots overall on goal throughout the tournament too. So they're doing it on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a player that we're going to keep talking about for the rest of 2024. I think we've already been talking about her through 2023. I think there were some of us, and I'm sure Charlie included, a little surprised to have not seen her get more call-ins or be heavily considered for a World Cup roster at that point. But there's an Olympics ahead of them, and now we're watching Jaden Shaw kind of take command of these opportunities in front of her. I think against Brazil, this is a player that you absolutely want to have, you know, going up against them. Brazil is unafraid to kind of get into rough and tumbles when they need to, but they're also a team that, similar to Mexico, are probably going to challenge the United States in terms of you know, an aggressive press, or possibly even send out some overloads at times. And we're absolutely going to see them try to progress the ball with their quick passing. And they're not afraid to play out of pressure, or, and in fact, they kind of maybe embrace that and welcome that a bit. So I think, you know, having a Jaden Shaw on our side of things for the Americans, who can also is someone who has those capabilities to find that final pass or to break those lines and catch those seams when just when they're opening up at the right time. So I think she's playing with a level of maturity that folks forget that she's only 19. But I'm also curious as to what playing an extra time and in these conditions, what that's going to mean for a rotation going into the final, if it means anything at all. But with this tournament, they're going to maybe say, this is what it's for. It's to see what you're made of in the buildup to the Olympics. So if you're unable to go on the, in the biggest game, you know, of a tournament, you know, what's that going to say? So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe she's still circled for a starting 11 in the final.
Who's the favorite going into the final? What's your opinion?
Oh boy. I think, look, it's the CONCACAF. It's a 2024 CONCACAF. You know, W Gold Cup. I'm not going to come on here and say it's not USA. It's USA, Jesse. They got to go in there and get it done. You know, can't let the CONCACAF Gold Cup go home to CONMEBOL. I want to see it. And, you know, I think this is the moment, right? I think we're watching some of these players kind of cast out, you know, some of these shadows that they've been carrying with them from the World Cup. You know, and I think this is the tournament that is helping some of them actually put some of that behind them. So I think what's really going to help them take that next step forward, putting the World Cup behind them, stepping forward into the Olympics, is making sure that they go out there and get that dub.
I'm a little nervous. I'll be honest, Chuck. I'm a little nervous.
As I think we all should, because
Brazil team is good. Brazil team's good. I'm a little nervous. I love our women, but I'm a little nervous. Yeah.
I mean, the Mexico game, I think, really showcased what a team like Mexico, who's supposed to be so inferior, were able to really pass right through any sort of press. They controlled the game. They controlled the tempo. I think that's what was shocking, is Mexico took it to the U.S. for most of the match, and they didn't play without fear, and they're winning their 1v1s or winning second balls. But my question to you, Sandra, is now that we've seen a number of players in the attacking positions. Jin Shaw, I think she's cemented herself in the team. But Mitch Purse, who's dealing with some muscular issue, she's looked really good when she's been playing in her attacking position. Sophia Smith finally comes in and scores a golazo. We've been waiting for her to really show what she's all about. Trini Robin has played, has shown moments, but it hasn't been consistent throughout 90 minutes. And Alex Morgan, who is an alternate, comes in and saying, hey, I'm not done yet. But Katarina Macario's coming back. We saw, you know, similar to Mitch Purse when she's come back, Rose Lavelle comes in and makes a difference. What is the best trio? Because everyone has their own individual talent and what their strengths are. But what do you think is the best trio right now for the U.S. Women's National Team?
Oh, boy. I think if you're asking me to also consider when everyone is healthy, I think, you know, you're shouting out Macario. I think we also got to shout out Mal Swanson as well. This is a player that came in as a training camp player, probably to get evaluated a little bit by the, you know, U.S. soccer, is going to get a chance to show how she has recovered in NWSL play. So this is another player, I think, when
you're looking at that attacking pool. Let me help you then. People who are match fit now.
I think you got to take Jaden Shaw as someone to take a serious look at to be involved in that trio. I like Sophia Smith as well. And listen, I know that folks are maybe taking a look at Trinity Rodman and maybe saying that she's having a questionable tournament, but I like some of the fire that we've been seeing from her in this, and I'm going to include her in that as well. I'm sticking with the youngins. I think Alex Morgan is a player who's, you know, that veteran presence, and she still has plenty to give, and I think she will continue to do so. So I think they're all in the mix for that, but I think for right now, I like Rodman. I like Smith.
Play the kids. You gotta play the kids. She wants you to play the kids. Emma Hayes, if you're listening, please make that happen. Twyla, if you're listening, we know that you do, then you need to make that happen as well. Play the kids against Brazil. We want to see it. Thank you so much, Sandra Herrera, for your expertise and knowledge about the U.S. Women's National Team. Make sure you catch her show, The Attacking Third, on any podcast platform that you like to listen to the shows, or on the Golazo Network. You can find her there. And as a reminder, the W Gold Cup Final is happening on Sunday. Coverage will begin at 7 p.m. Eastern on Paramount Plus. So go watch that game. The U.S. Women's National Team versus Brazil. It is going to be popping off. It's going to be a great game. And let's go, ladies.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Welcome back to Call It What You Want. Jimmy Conrad alongside Jesse Marsh and Charlie Davies. We're going to look forward now. Well, we did a little bit with the U.S. Women's National Team in the game against Brazil, but now we're going to do it for our player pool on the U.S. Men's National Team side of things. We're going to get into our games to watch for this upcoming weekend, a little weekend preview. Games on P Plus and Golazo, there's a few that you need to check out. The one in particular that jumps out, Juventus and Steve Weston-McKinney is coming back. Team aware, will he play? Will he not? They're taking on Atalanta. That's 1 p.m. on Sunday on the Golazo Network. But let's go back to Friday. We got Go Ahead Eagles taking on PSV. That's at 2 p.m. Eastern. Borussia Mönchengladbach and Köln. Crystal Palace taking on Luton. Hopefully Chris Richards gets another goal. Real Madrid is hosting Celta de Vigo. Luka de la Torre going to the Bernabeu. See how that goes for him. And then Bayer Leverkusen remain undefeated after coming back from 2 goals down in the Europa League against Karabag to go 2-2. Still have not lost a game in all competitions this season. They're hosting Wolfsburg and Kevin Paredes. Charlie, I'm coming to you first. Which game is standing out for you? Which player do you want to see perform at the highest levels?
Well, we just talked earlier in the show about Gio Reyna and his expectation coming into the camp. And also, it coinciding with players who were doing well in that position. So for me, I'm going to be watching Celta Vigo, Luka de la Torre up against number one La Liga side, Real Madrid. And he just came out and said, I want to be more present in the U.S. men's national team. I want more playing time. I think I'm ready for it. So now, playing.
Wait, when did he say that?
Best in the world.
I missed that. He said that?
Are you sleeping under a rock? It just came out.
I'm looking at this hair. Oh, I didn't comb it today. Okay, fine. Yeah. Fine.
Luca said he's ready. He wants more playing time. He wants to show it. Well, playing against Real Madrid over the weekend.
Do it.
Let's go.
Do it.
That's what I'm saying.
Let's do it. I love it. I love the attitude. Love the spirit. All right, Jesse, how about you?
I've been talking about Joe Scally for a couple of weeks. I'm going to watch him again, and then I'm going to come back. But yeah, I think from the fullback depth chart, this is what I'm thinking again. Obviously, we know Robinson and Dest are our two guys that they are most dynamic in that position. But we need to be also thinking about who's filling in for those guys if there's any issues. So yeah, I'm going to watch Joe and see how he does.
All right, I'm going to keep it in Germany. I'm going to go with that Leverkusen-Wolfsburg game, and I'm really curious how 20-year-old Kevin Paredes does in particular. He started 6 straight games, so got a lot of trust after the winter break and came on as a sub in that first game after the winter break, and it started 6 straight. Unfortunately, they haven't won any of those games. They have 2 losses and 6 draws. So not necessarily losing games, but they're not winning them either. They're currently in 13th in the Bundesliga. What's interesting
and
for me,
listen, Leverkusen survived their Europa League. They almost had their first loss of the season.
That's true.
2-0, and they came back, of course, with Florian Wirtz. So this
what a finish, by the way. Yeah, Bayer Leverkusen. For those that don't know, Bayer Leverkusen is known as Bayer Neverkusen because they have never won a trophy of significance. And so,
wow, that's disrespectful.
I'm just saying. I'm just the messenger. This is just
and to put it in perspective, they are 35 matches unbeaten. They have not lost in all competitions this whole season. Pretty incredible.
Yeah, they've been pretty fantastic this season.
Xabi Alonso deserves a lot of credit. He's done an amazing job there, no question. But the key is that Florian Wirtz is healthy, and he's been the best player in the Bundesliga. For me, one of the best players in the world. Like, this kid is a major, major talent. And if he's healthy, and they put him on in the second half, and the game changed entirely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, be curious to see if Never Losing, as producer Dez says, Bayer Never Losing, can hold on to both Xabi Alonso and Florian Wirtz over the next summer or two or three transfer windows. It'll be interesting to see. But I want to see Kevin Paredes show up in this game in particular. Obviously, a great test against a very organized team in Bayer Leverkusen. Probably going up against Granit Xhaka at times, so that'll be fun to see. He plays, you know, somewhat in an attacking midfield position in the left side. Only one goal of these six games. I just want to see more from him. No. I want to see more actions in the final third from him in particular.
Jimmy,
yes.
Has he gone above Brendan Aaronson in the depth chart?
Whew, good question.
I think Brendan's a different position, though. That's my thing.
But national team, Greg uses him as an outside winger, right? Who comes inside. Right? So
they're different players.
Yeah, they are. But, I mean, they're competition now. In terms of roster spots, Maybe.
I get it. I'd say that Brendan still provides some intangibles that Kevin doesn't have yet. This Energizer Bunny energy that maybe none of the players have to that level, that player profile that I think Brendan has. And he's a bit of a pest, right? He's always moving, always looking for the ball, always looking to do something. Kevin
Energizer Bunny.
You like that?
Yes. Yeah. No.
All right. We're going to end.
Can I give a quick shout out to Dave Sarakin. At Maccabi Tel Aviv. Great performance. They win 4-1 away at Olympiacos. He's the assistant coach for Robbie Keane in Tel Aviv, and they're having a great season. So good luck, Dave. I'm happy for him.
What about Robbie Keane's dye job? He's got light brown hair. It's crazy.
You need to spice it up on the bench too. You know, you need to keep it fresh.
All right, other games happening on the Golasso channel. Got some USL action as USL Championship kicks off their season in 2024. North Carolina FC is hosting Charleston Battery. That's on 7 p.m. This is on Saturday, 7 p.m. Eastern. And then Sac Republic, my friends there, Todd Donovan, who is the team president, and Mark Briggs, the coach. Big fans of those guys. They're hosting Orange County SC. That'll be kicking off at 10 p.m. Eastern. And those games should be a lot of fun. USL Championship is going to be ultra competitive this season. So if you're not a fan of a local team and it might be a USL Championship team, we highly encourage you to go follow one of them. It is great fun and a lot of good action happening. All right, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, we're going to get into the top 10 rankings for CONCACAF, as Jesse teased a little bit earlier. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the stretch run of Call It What You Want. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Jesse Marsh and Charlie Davies, and we are going to get into it. The top 10 clubs as of right now in CONCACAF, rated by CONCACAF, voted only on by CONCACAF, apparently. And number one, Monterrey. Number two, Club America. They just slapped around Chivas Guadalajara 3-0 the other day.
You should say numero uno, numero dos, numero tres, numero cuatro.
Sí, claro que sí. Number four, Philly. Number five, Pachuca. Number six, Club León. Number seven, Chivas Guadalajara. Eight, Columbus Crew. Top seven.
You can't have Orlando City number nine, and they just got absolutely worked.
And the LAFC number 10. Listen, Chivas Guadalajara just got worked by Club América as well.
Yeah, but Orlando got properly worked, and they moved up two spots.
Orlando City, by the way, the defending in that game was atrocious. For me, defending is a lost art. So, yes, that in itself should put them down minus 10.
LA's been back in MLS Cups. How are they number 10?
Do we really believe that there are six clubs out of the top seven in our region that are the best teams are Mexican? Do we really believe that?
No, I don't believe that.
No. Not at all.
And so where does the coefficient come from?
That's what I'm trying to understand. LAFC have been to back-to-back MLS Cups. They're not 10. What is this list?
Columbus even Crew Philly being even Philly balling. I mean, you're just going MLS. But okay, like I get it. The top three: Monterrey, America, Tigres. Okay, maybe. Okay, I can understand that. You could argue that an LAFC or a Columbus could be in those.
They should
top
be higher.
Well.
They should be higher.
Yes,
yeah.
But Columbus then, you know, for sure.
Again, for only one club in the top seven, that it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense. I think even you look at Leagues Cup. You know, you play Leagues Cup now when it's a little bit more of the Mexican preseason versus CONCACAF when it's a little bit more of the CONCACAF Champions League when it's a little bit more of the MLS preseason. You know, this is always the factor: is who's in midseason, who's in midseason form, and how does that factor in the competition for when you play MLS teams against Mexican league teams?
Yeah, great point. I don't know. I'm going to get down to it here with this.
No bueno.
No bueno. No mames way. No mames way. All right, we're calling it a show. That's the end of Call It What You Want. We want to thank you, as always, for your support. Make sure to follow Call It What You Want wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have some time, take a few seconds to leave us a rating. Hopefully it's a really good one. Or if you're on Apple Podcasts, a review. And then catch us on the CBS Sports Golazo Network. We'd really appreciate that. And you know what? Have a great weekend, and we will see you on the other side of it. Later.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.